You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Nick Saban still wants to coach. We'll hear from Coach. He's trying to get into the building for that showdown with Georgia coming up this weekend. We'll check in with Tom Verducci. Tom was there when the Braves rolled the Dodgers 10-2. They're up 3-1. The Astros stay alive. They beat the Rays 4-3. You got big games coming up this weekend. Baseball coming up tonight. Georgia-Alabama this weekend. Packers and the Buccaneers. 877-3DP-SHOW. Email address dp@danpatrick.com. Twitter handle at DP Show. But I begin this hour with just the possibility. Just the possibility that LeBron James understands standing pat, keeping the roster they have, is not going to be good enough for the Lakers to try to repeat next year. So follow me on this. Anthony Davis is going to opt out, and then he's going to come back in and probably get, you know, $240 million over 5 years. But then you start to look at the roster. Ty Lue's taking over the Clippers. The Clippers are going to be better, I think, maybe more cohesive from the standpoint of you're going to be out of the bubble. Ty Lue knows the team. He's being brought in to help with chemistry. And really, you start with Kawhi Leonard. The published reports about Kawhi Leonard is he's not a great teammate and was kind of on his own. Late for planes, you know, he was kind of on his own time frame. You couldn't take him out unless he wanted to come out. There was also, you know, games that he would sit out, load management here. So Ty Lue's got to go in and clean up a little bit of a mess. And you got Paul George situation. What do you do with the roster? And I look at Denver. Denver's not going to get worse. They're probably going to be better. Portland, if they're healthy, they're going to be better. I don't know what's going to happen with the Rockets, some of these other teams. Golden State, to me, is the team to beat going into next year, believe it or not. I just think if everybody's back, why would I not, you know, why would I go against Golden State, given their track record there? And I think LeBron is looking at this. And that's why LeBron is looking at the following. He is setting his sights on Chris Paul. NBA executive said that wouldn't be surprised if they tried to zero in and get Chris Paul to the Lakers. I don't know what you have to give up, but you're going to have to give up some players. I don't know if Oklahoma City is going to give him up, but it feels like the Bucks and Knicks are interested in Chris Paul. So at least they're maybe listening to some offers. You know, LA has a draft pick, a first round pick, but you're going to have to give up quite a few players on the roster to be able to fit him in salary-wise there. I just don't think LeBron James is going to go, you know, I'm good with this roster going into next season. I would think that Tristan Thompson might be somebody that they would look at, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think that there's possibilities of the Lakers adding somebody. The question is, what do you give up to get Chris Paul? And then how else do you fill out your roster here? Because, you know, you got to have depth here. And they would lose significant depth if they're trading some of these players to Oklahoma City. But this is, you know, just a possibility. DeMarcus Cousins is still out there. I don't know if he still has legal issues, but LeBron James is, he knows that the window is now. And if he can bring in a couple other players, you put Chris Paul on that roster, you make sure that he doesn't go to Milwaukee. Miami is going to be better, you know, in the East. If Milwaukee got Chris Paul, they would be better. You got Doc Rivers with Philadelphia. Boston, maybe they're going to get it right and figure it out. It's a lot of talent, young talent there. There's a lot of different teams right now that are still poised to make that next step. And I think LeBron is, he's looking at barbarians at the gate. Like, I got, they're coming, and I got to do something here. There is no way LeBron James goes, we're good right now. AD comes back. I got Caldwell Pope. I got Caruso. Playoff Rondo. Kyle Kuzma. That ain't happening. Quinn Cook. They thought so much of Quinn Cook, the bus left the arena after they won the championship and left him there. They were like, hey, we forgot Quinn Cook. Yeah, keep going. They had to circle back and go get him. There is no way LeBron is going to go, I'm good. And I don't know what moves can be made. But also factor this in. His agency, Clutch Agency, who do they represent? That's always what I keep an eye on. How friendly can we make this work for both? Because a great deal for the Lakers is a great deal for LeBron James. This is about LeBron going in for the kill again. hey, I got my title. That's not good enough. He knows that. He gets one more title, two more titles, then he knows, hey, I got a legitimate stamp on being the greatest player of all time. Whether you want to give it to him or not, he won't have to say, I want my damn respect. And I think that's why he's looking at his good buddy, Chris Paul. And if you bring in DeMarcus Cousins or Tristan Thompson and you ship off some of these players, they can somehow make it work with the salary cap. This is what LeBron James is. That's what I guarantee you, when that game ended, LeBron James was already thinking about next year. This is how when Nick Saban or Dabo Sweeney wins a title, soon the game ends, they get on the phone and start talking to recruits. Hey, you want to be part of this? That's what I would be shocked if LeBron is not doing that right now. And it's only 7 o'clock in the morning where he is. But I'm guessing. And you got a shorter offseason here, that turnaround, probably not having basketball till February, but make no mistake about it. And I was told this yesterday afternoon. Somebody who works for a team in the East said, hey, you know, we worry about getting our team back to where it should be, but we are really worried that LeBron is going to go after some players. And he's going to build up that roster to be even more formidable here. But keep in mind what's going on here. These teams in the West, I don't know if Houston's any better. I don't know if they trade James Harden. I don't know if they trade Russell Westbrook. But I do think that Denver will be better. Portland will be better. Golden State definitely will be better. And I'm assuming that the Clippers, without being in the bubble and Ty Lue coming in, that they should be as good, if not better. Yeah, Paulie.
Golden State feels like a soccer team that gets relegated and then comes back. They went from 57 wins to 15. They were completely off the sports map this year. Completely. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like a gap year. You almost forget that they're instantly relevant when everyone's healthy next year.
But I think that's what people are forgetting about. Sure. Because when I said, hey, Golden State's the team to beat, you looked at me like, really?
It's because they're out of your mind.
Yes. But then you start to think, I still have that core. I'm good. I got the second pick overall in the draft. Golden State will be, I think, the team to beat. Unless LeBron, if he adds Chris Paul and or DeMarcus Cousins, Tristan Thompson, then the Lakers will be the team to beat. But I don't know what Vegas has. They probably have the Lakers and then the Clippers. I don't know where Golden State is there, but I would look at Golden State. Steph coming back, Klay Thompson coming back, Draymond Green. McLevin, you're
Draymond Green, yeah. I don't know why. I just feel like
he's still a good player.
Is he?
I think, well, in that system, if he played in Orlando, nobody would talk about him. They would. But in that system, he knows how to play. Like Dennis Rodman was so valuable because he filled a role on great teams. Draymond Green fills a role on that team. Individually, I don't think he's a great player. On that team with what he does, he can be a great player.
How would they cover a Luka? Like, I feel like there's just some problems with that team right now.
Well, everybody has a problem covering Luka.
Yeah. I mean, Paul George basically cried whenever he got matched up with Luka Doncic, but it just feels like the league is passing by. I don't know why.
But who's still guarding Steph? Who's still guarding Klay?
Are those guys' legs going to hold up 82?
Well, they've been resting. They didn't do anything this year. Like 2020.
You know who Vegas loves is the Nets, too.
Well,
same reason I have a doubt for the Warriors. The Nets, like, it feels guys coming off injury, you can't trust them yet.
No, and the person I spoke to who works for a team in the East had some serious concerns. Unless they got Mike D'Antoni, that's another thing to keep an eye on. D'Antoni is going to have opportunities. I don't know, maybe Indiana to be the head coach, but if he comes in and helps Steve Nash and you have a coach with head coaching experience in a style that I'm sure Kyrie and Kevin Durant would love and those other players on the Nets, then maybe you get something that's really interesting there. But I got nervous when Kyrie said, hey, we all get to coach. You know, we don't have a head coach here. It's like when you say, hey, we got two really good quarterbacks on our roster. That means you don't have one really great quarterback on your roster. Hey, we got two guys who can play. Do you got one that's great? Hey, we got all these head coaches. No, you need a head coach here, Kai. You do. But yes, McLevin.
How long does it really take to get over an ACL? Like Clay was an ACL. Is he going to be Clay Thompson? Doesn't it take a year? Or you've had it a million times.
Not a million. They finally started putting things in. When I got my replacement knee, I said, there's nothing left to take out. And they said, no, we're putting something in. We're going to give you a new knee here. But ACL, MCL, pretty much got it all. I didn't do PCL, but he'll be ready to go. I mean, he's had a lot of time off. I mean, we're talking about the NBA Finals, right? He's had as much time off as Durant. Durant had an Achilles. I'll take the ACL over an Achilles. Yeah, Paulie.
By the way, do you guys notice that as you get older, injuries don't go away? You just get accustomed to having them, like an annoying house guest.
Yeah.
Like you break a finger or something like that, and it just stays painful and hurt, and you're like, all right, well, I'm going to get used to that thing.
But when you're younger, it doesn't register.
They go away.
It goes away, or you're okay with playing through it. Like you just go, okay, I got a tender ankle here. Hey, I think I sprained my wrist here. But you still play. It's when you get older, you're like, man, this really hurts. We complain more when we get older. That's the. When you're younger, you don't complain. You don't complain about anything. Get older, like, oh yeah, McLovin.
If the Warriors do want to trade number two, can they get anything like immediately impactful for that spot?
I'm sure they can. I don't know who they're targeting. I don't know if they want to take somebody with that second pick, but I don't think Minnesota wants to use that number one overall pick. But I don't know, who would covet that and say, boy, I'd like, we have a young roster. We want to bring in, somebody.
How about my 76ers with Embiid or Simmons as an example?
To do what?
For the number two pick.
Oh, to give up one of those guys?
Yeah, give up one of those guys, send them to Golden State. I'll hang up and listen.
Oh, my God. If you said that they could get one of those two guys for the second pick overall, I'd do that if I'm Golden
State. Well, if the Sixers want to break up the party, maybe
I don't think Doc does.
Yeah.
I think Doc realizes that I have something special. Let me see it first before I go, nope, this isn't going to work. I think that's the difference there. Dale Earnhardt Jr. announced the birth of his second daughter, Nicole Lorraine Earnhardt. And Junior just had his birthday. So she was born 2 days after Dale Jr.'s birthday. That's great. I get a chance to text with him just back and forth, and it's usually about fatherly things. It's not about NASCAR or anything. It's just more of just checking in because I like him. For some reason, I just felt like I took him under my wings, or I'm protective of him when he revealed so much when he would come on the show. And not that I'm a father figure to him, but I'm there for advice when it comes to broadcasting, even having girls too, because I have three. So I'm great at handing out advice with daughters there, but that's great. Great for Junior. So I'll send him a text there. Nick Saban's planning on coaching. I don't know what the NCAA rules are. He's lobbying to coach, and he thinks that this is an unfair situation. He is tested positive. I guess he's asymptomatic, but he wants to know why he can't be in the building.
The protocol is if you're in quarantine, you can't have any remote access to the sidelines, and you can't go to the game even if they put you in an isolated area. So never having thought much about that, and I'm not being critical of anybody here, if you're the head coach, there ought to be a better way to do it. I don't know exactly what that is, but there should be a better way to do that. You ought to be able to have some kind of communication with the sidelines, just like I have communication with somebody on the field during practice. So you can't have any of that. And that doesn't seem quite right.
He's not suspended. Could I put him in a suite by himself where he could have communication to the sidelines and Steve Sarkisian? And I don't know. I would tell Fritzy to reach out to the NCAA, but that seems fruitless. But I'm just curious, does the SEC have rules here? Is it conference by conference, or is this, I mean, this is all uncharted territory. Like, we've never been through this before, that asymptomatic, can he be in a suite by himself? and therefore have communications to the sidelines. Yeah, Paul.
The other day it was reported that the NCAA rules supersede everything, at least in advance of this game.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Once Greg Sankey gets a hold of it, you know, who knows? But that 90 minutes before the game, he cannot be on the property, he cannot be there, cannot communicate. What if you put him in a skybox by himself? He's escorted in 3-4 hours before kickoff.
I don't know.
And he's escorted out.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think you put him in a bubble and then let him stand on the sidelines. You know, he can walk around and he's just in a bubble. Put some, you know, that packing bubbles, just put him in that. Give him a headset. Yeah, McLovin.
You mean like one of those giant, like, inflatable samurai outfits, those, sumo wrestling?
Those sumo wrestlers.
You ever seen that?
Yes. Reggie in Mississippi. Hey, Reg, what's on your mind today? Hey, Reg.
Not much, apparently.
Hey, Reg. Bye, Reg. Kyle in California. Hey, Kyle, what's on your mind today? Hey, Kyle.
Hey, DJ.
Hey, bud.
I can't believe I just heard you say you're picking the Warriors next year. I can't believe we just went through this.
No, no, no. I said I would have them as the favorites. The Clippers were the favorites this year, and how did that work out? So I just tell you who I think will be the favorites there.
So you're saying the favorite as in automatically not going to win it as the favorite.
Okay. If you want to, yeah, let we'll do that to stay friendly with one another here, Kyle.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Anyway, so for the Lakers, so in terms of like the whole free agent market, I think it's going to be really interesting. Obviously, not as big of a free agent market with all the financial impact. So it's going to be interesting to see where some of these mid-level guys go. I think the Lakers are going to snatch up some of these guys, maybe like Danilo Gallinari, a guy like that, fit in great. And let me ask you one thing about Ty Lue and the Clippers. What is Ty Lue moving one seat over going to do in terms of changing the relationship between the role players and those stars? That's where the animosity is.
Yep, and I think that's going to be the biggest challenge there, Kyle. Thanks for the phone call as always. And you know, can he be a disciplinarian? Does he have their respect? They gave him a 5-year deal. And players do follow that. Like, how much job security do you have? How much are you making? And you got Kawhi. You know, Kawhi is, you know, people got to, somebody has to be able to say to Kawhi, you got to come back to earth here. Now, you got to be that great player. And part of that is you got to be a great teammate as well. He's a great player. I just think he basically hijacked the organization here. And it put Doc in a really precarious position because the other players were looking at Doc and how Doc treated Kawhi. And he treated him differently than he did his other players. Hey, we're not going to take off until Kawhi gets here. Load management, Kawhi's not playing. Hey, I'm going to take out Kawhi. Kawhi doesn't want to come out of the game. These are all documented things, by the way, folks. And Ty Lue, I don't know. You know, he didn't get enough credit with LeBron in Cleveland. I don't know. Probably not going to get credit with the Clippers because it's going to be Kawhi and Paul George who get the credit. He'll probably get the blame. But I think trying to be able to stand up to Kawhi and say, this is what I need from you. And this is a player, along with Paul George, that following next season they can opt out. It's really a very delicate, tenuous situation there. Because there's no guarantee. Kawhi might go, hey, I don't want to play under this. I don't want you telling me what I can do. Kawhi's the one who came to town, didn't want to go to the Lakers, and he said, hey, I want Paul George here. And they went out, they acquiesced, they got Paul George there. Gave up the future, get Paul George. So, and Ty Lue doesn't get a honeymoon period. Ty Lue has as much pressure on him as Frank Vogel does, if not more so. We'll take a break. Tom Verducci will join us coming up. What did he think of Dave Roberts leaving Clayton Kershaw in the game in the sixth inning? And is this over? Take a break. 20 after the hour. Your phone calls welcome as well. Right here on the Dan Patrick Show. I'm going to save you money. The average person is saving $400 a year by just listening to me. Who's your phone carrier right now? You got AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile? Well, the big carriers, they hook you in because you're going to pay for unlimited data for your cell phone, and you're only using 2 gigs. So why are you doing that? You have that obscene monthly fee for data, and you never need that perks you never use. And that's why Pure Talk USA is here to the rescue. Pure Talk only charges you for the data you need. And they're on the exact same tower, so you get the exact same coverage, but at half the cost. Unlimited talk, text, 2 gigs of data, $20 a month. The average person saving $400 a year. It's really simple to sign up. Just remember, on your cell phone, pound 250 and say Dan Patrick. So hit 250, say Dan Patrick. You automatically save, immediately save 50% off your first month. Pound 250, say Dan Patrick. You'll have the option to receive a one-time auto-dialed text message from Pure Talk USA. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. You know, just a reminder, the LSU-Florida game has been postponed. Oklahoma State Baylor postponed, Cincinnati Tulsa postponed, Vandy versus Missouri, and Florida International and Charlotte, they have been postponed as well. I go into a weekend, I'm not quite sure who's playing and who's not playing, and that includes the NFL. More phone calls coming up, 877-3DP-SHOW, email address dp at danpatrick.com. It's a meat Friday. The Traegers are fired up. Check out the Traeger Grills. You can go to TraegerGrills.com/DP show and do that today. Update the poll results, and I want to bring in Tom Verducci.
If you don't like the Astros, would you rather see them lose in this series or go to the World Series and see them lose there or risk them winning it all? 92% want to see them lose now.
Tom Verducci, Sports Illustrated, baseball senior writer, of course, working for Fox and MLB during the playoffs. He was in Arlington, Texas last night. The Dodgers and the Braves, Game 5 at 9 Eastern on Fox Sports 1. Tom, kind enough to join us here. You saw Kershaw go out for the sixth inning. What did you think?
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with that. He had a low pitch count. He had seemed to have things in order. The issue was when things started to unravel a little bit, right? I mean, we've been watching Dave Roberts in these postseasons the last few years, and especially third time around the lineup. I mean, he's quick with the trigger. It's the way the Dodgers do business. So to me, the flashpoint, it wasn't Kersh on Freeman because he's handled Freeman pretty well over the career. He made a bad pitch to Freeman, like a really bad pitch. And the Dodgers got burned with their defense, by the way. If you notice, that was a ground ball single turned into a double because they had Mookie Wilson shifted over to right center. That tells me Kershaw was supposed to get the ball away from Freeman. He didn't, got burned. The flashpoint was Ozuna. Ozuna actually said after the game, after that Ocuna infield hit, when the throw was made, you know, went into the dugout and he went to second, Ozuna said he talked to Freeman and he said, "You get on base and then I'll get Gratterol." He was already assuming that Kershaw would not pitch to him a third time. So that's the flashpoint. Didn't have a problem with him starting the inning.
You know, we can think that the Dodgers bats, you know, woke up with 11 runs in that first inning the previous game. But after the third inning of that game, those bats didn't do anything. I think they had basically three hits. So it's not like they came alive. They came alive for a moment. And then after that, you know, that previous game and then last night, the Dodger bats have been pretty silent here. It's like Seager's the one guy. Mookie Betts hasn't done much here. So Bellinger hasn't done much. There's a lot of fingers if you're pointing for fingers of blame here, Tom.
Yeah, it's a great point because, yeah, I mean, we love talking about the pitching decisions or manager decisions on pitchers, right? But that's a great point. They really have not hit. And you think about the guys who have shut them down, you know, after that big outburst in game three, it was Hoskins Ynoa, a 22-year-old right-hander with very little major league experience. And last night you had this kid, Bryce Wilson, who pitched an unbelievable game, had seven career starts, 22 years old, hadn't pitched in a week and 2 weeks and a half. So, you know, they're not seeing Cy Young winners shutting them down. Maybe it's just they're not familiar with these guys, but a big load has to go to the Dodger offense because it was number one in baseball this year.
I also wondered about this when I was looking at the NBA bubble. You saw a lot of young teams do well because you didn't have to travel to Staples and play in front of a hostile crowd. You're playing in a basically sterile environment there. These younger players, and the Braves had a lot of younger players, they're there in they're not at Dodger Stadium. They're there in Arlington. There's no real, you know, home field disadvantage here. There's no booing. There's none of that. Feels like that plays right into the Braves that it's a young team. They may not know better, and they're not intimidated by any of this.
I'm with you, especially when it comes to the pitchers. There's no question about that. Actually, last night when the game started, of the nine people on the field for the Braves, Five of them were 23 and younger. And they're shutting down, you know, this juggernaut of a team, because the Dodgers in the regular season were a juggernaut. I'll tell you, because I've been in the bubble, I'm down there. It feels like a college or high school atmosphere, because the families are really close to the field here in Arlington. There's 11,000 people, but they're scattered around. It's really not that loud. They still have some fake crowd noise in there, but they're all saying hello to mom and dad or the girlfriend. It really feels like an American Legion tournament. So you're right. I think it does help, especially these young pitchers. I mean, you put them in Dodger Stadium, 50,000 people, you know, triple deck. That's a different atmosphere than a bubble.
If this doesn't work out for the Dodgers, what happens with Dave Roberts, if anything?
I don't think anything happens, really.
Okay.
You know, again, it depends how it ends the next couple of days. If it does, I'm not counting them out, Dan. I mean, this is a really, really good team. You saw the way they broke out in the first inning the other night. I'm not saying they're going to score 11 again. but, man, the lineup is due to break out with something here at some point beyond what they did in that one inning. So I'm not ruling them out. It's going to be difficult, though. Don't get me wrong. Bullpen day for the Braves today. And then you've got Fried and Anderson. And I think both those two guys are legit.
Oh,
and
man.
Fried is probably the tougher matchup for the Dodgers. But both those guys are really good.
That curveball his, I hadn't seen much of him. But I when I watched him, I was like, oh, my gosh.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because the way they've shut down the Dodgers here overall, you know, the one exception, this is not a high velocity team. We love talking about fastballs, and the Dodgers have a million guys coming out of the bullpen throwing literally 100 miles an hour. If you lined up the 16 playoff teams, the Braves are 13th in average velocity. So you've got Fried with that curveball. He's added the slider. You've got Anderson with that killer changeup. I thought Wilson did a great job mixing up his pitches. They're not beating the Dodgers with velocity or pure stuff. They're pitching this group. And you have to give them credit for being so young and this good.
What advice would you give the Astros when it comes to questions about 2017?
I go full on Nuke LaLoosh and be as dull and boring as possible, right? Don't take the bait. Because you know what happened in that first round with Minnesota, right? Carlos Correa, they got through Minnesota. He's like, oh, we're back. You know, we're like the Bills. You wanted to get rid of us. You can't get rid of us. I think some guys talked to him, because the next round they were like very chill about it. I think that's the way I would handle it. Don't give anybody any more ammunition. You've done plenty of that already.
And Altuve's had a couple of big hits. Are his throwing woes that was only one game there?
No, but I can tell you a story here. Before that series, the Rays scouts in their hitters meeting before the series, they said, when you hit a ground ball to second base, even a routine one, bust it down the line. We're not sure if this guy's going to make the play. So they saw something there with his body language, how deliberate he was, the arm, whatever it was, they put those guys on notice. So if you notice, Choi and Lau busted it down the line on routine balls and put pressure on him. I'm not sure that goes away that quickly, Dan.
And you've been around long enough that we had Chuck Knobloch and we have Steve Sachs. Mackie Sasser couldn't throw the ball back to the mound. Did you ever do, I'm sure you did, but like talk to a psychologist or somebody who would look at this and say, what happens in the brain when, you know, Rick Ankiel's another one.
Yeah, it's when athletes start to think, right? They start to think about the process, the lack of thought. You hear that from hitters all the time, right? I wasn't thinking anything, just see the ball, hit it. You know, it's funny, the guy pitching, well, he pitched in relief last night for the Braves, Tyler Matzek. He had the yips as a pitcher, right? He was out of baseball, former number one pick out of baseball. It took him a year going to see psychologists, psychiatrists, throwing every day on his own. And it took him another year in the minor leagues, independent ball, to get back. I think more guys just don't get back. It's really hard to get back from it. And it seems to affect second baseman, as you mentioned there, and the occasional pitcher.
But it's an odd throw from second base. It's like an odd throw when a comebacker goes to the mound. The pitcher, he's guiding it. Shortstop and third, you have to unleash it. You know, it's rare when you get, you know, a looper that you can throw in there. Second was always odd. And I was a former shortstop, so you get it and you fire. Second, sometimes you fire, sometimes you lob it, and it feels like sometimes you're right in between.
Well, I think you're on something there. When you have a little bit of extra time, that clock tells you have a little bit of time, that's when the brain starts to get in the way of the muscles, right? If you're a shortstop in the hole, third base, long throw, you don't have time to think about it. Second baseman knows he has time, and I think that works against them.
if I would have told you when the Marlins had their outbreak that they were going to make the playoffs, what would you have said?
No way. I mean, Don Mattingly did an incredible job with that team. I mean, you think about it, they had 18 people out. I think it was 174 roster moves they went through. They had 20 guys make their major league debuts in a 60-game season. I mean, it was crazy. But, you know, listen, that young group found itself. Mattingly did a great job. Their young pitching is legit. I didn't think it would come this quickly. But, again, Dan, you made the point about nobody in the stands. I think that helped them. It was sort of a bonding experience, too, to go through what they did. But bottom line was, I think Mattingly has to be the manager of the year for the job that he did with that group.
Have fun tonight there. 9 Eastern on Fox Sports 1, and it'll be Braves and Dodgers again. Do you think we're going to live to see another game?
I do. I can't count out the Dodgers. You know what? I think it's a low-scoring game tonight again, though, because that Braves bullpen, it's a bullpen game. Brian Snitker's got a lot of good options. So, you know, most cases, most teams are up against it with a bullpen game, not the Braves.
Thank you, Tom. I know you're busy. We appreciate you making some time for us.
Yeah, Dan, have a good one.
That's Tom Verducci, Sports Illustrated, senior writer working for Fox Sports and MLB. Game coming up tonight at 9 Eastern. My Rays against the Astros, that's the yearly game. It's around 5:20 Eastern, McClellan. Does that sound about right?
I think it's 6 and 9.
It's 6 o'clock?
Yeah, yeah. It's like 6:07 and 9:07 are the exact times Eastern for the first pitches.
Okay. Do you want to change the poll question? Or are you okay with this?
I think I want to ask a Nick Saban question.
Okay.
Paulie had an option.
Okay.
Would you bet a week's pay whether Nick Saban's going to be in the building or not in the building?
Well, I'd like to know if he tests negative today and he tests negative tomorrow, is that enough to allow him in the building? Yeah, Paulie.
He'll find a way to test negative if that gets him in the building. And he'll find a tester down there who's got a red...
Do it again.
Yeah.
Get it to somebody else in here. Can you get somebody else in here? I think I'm negative.
Roll Tide.
Nope. Says you're positive. No. I think you got to look at it again. Yeah, McClellan.
Another poll question, and I think you have to say this before. Will Nick Saban's absence be the reason Alabama lost? Like, is that what everyone's going to say on Sunday morning if Alabama loses? Well, Nick Saban wasn't there.
Well, I think it'll be unfair, but, you know, when has that stood in the way of a good headline here with the media? It'd be unfair to Georgia, but, yeah, I do think that that'll factor in. I think because you have to factor in Saban and what he means to that team, and he is the preeminent college coach, maybe in history or certainly on the short list there, you know, it's hard to replace that. You can't replace that. And I think that there's moments where, and, you know, David Pollack of ESPN was telling us about that, that in the moment, Nick is going to make changes there. And there are very few coaches in any sport that make those changes in the moment. And he does that. It's on him to be able to do that. I would love for him to at least have contact with the sideline. I think that that would be fair. But, you know, I don't know if the NCAA is going to have any leeway. And they shouldn't just because it's Nick Saban. But during these times, you know, these are rules that are implemented when we don't have a pandemic. We have a pandemic. You know, how concerned are they about cheating or bending the rules here? And that's where I think that's what Coach Saban is saying. It's like, hey, this is different. During these times, it's different. And, you know, I don't know if he's got an audience that's going to listen to him or not, but I think he's going to do his best to force his way. Like, who do you call? Do you call Mark Emmert? Do you have the commissioner, Greg Sankey of the SEC, petition on your behalf to have him be able to coach? Like, I don't even know who you talk to. You got 20 hours to get this done. Yeah, Todd.
We have reached out, just so you know, to the SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey and to the NCAA to see if they have any information they can share about what he is and isn't allowed to do this weekend.
Yeah, and Greg is really good with us. He was always available during the offseason. I'd just be curious, can you lobby on behalf of Nick Saban to be able to coach in this game? Or if he reaches out to you, what is your role as the commissioner? Because then you have to go to the NCAA. And I don't want preferential treatment for Nick Saban, but I want fair treatment for him. Because of what's going on right now. These are unprecedented times for players and coaches. And I think that's all that Saban is saying. If I'm asymptomatic, can I be put in a suite? Can I be by myself? Could I still have contact with the sidelines and Steve Sarkisian? We'll take a break. Your phone calls are next here on the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. A couple of phone calls in here. Also watched Arch Manning. That's a Cooper Manning's son. That was last night on ESPN2 at 9 Eastern. Now, Cooper Manning is the oldest of the Manning brothers with Peyton and Eli, and he was a wide receiver, and he's the best athlete of the brothers. Cooper was a really good athlete, and then he had a neck issue, and he was forced to retire and didn't get to complete his college football season. His son, Arch, named after his father, Archie Manning, is a sophomore right now and getting a lot of national exposure. He got it as a freshman. And if you start to look at what's ahead of Arch Manning, he's got offers from every major college out there. But so he's a sophomore now. He'll have his junior and senior year. Then you go to college, you're going to have your freshman, sophomore, and junior year. So he's got 6 years before he would get a chance to go into the NFL. 6 years of exposure, because when he comes, they're already talking about him being the number one pick in the draft in what, 2024, McLovin?
I thought we did the math. Was it 24, 23? No. It's got to be later than that.
It's 6 years.
Yeah.
So it's 2025? Does that sound right? That he'd be the number one pick in the draft?
Mahomes slipping, Arch Manning available? Question mark?
Let's get it.
I just Googled 2025 mock draft. Nothing came up.
Okay, thank you. That's probably a good thing. Yes, Seton.
The kid is 15 years old. He's already 6'3", 195.
I know.
What?
Plus, it's not like you have to go far to go, hey, I got a question about reading his own defense here. Let me call Peyton. You know, I called Peyton last time. Let me call Eli here. Or you could ask, you know, Arch. You could ask your grandfather. Yes, Paul.
But what's the etiquette there? Who do you call first for your tips if you're Arch Manning?
I would call Archie Manning. And then Archie Manning would probably say, you know who would be really good with that? You know, I'd reach out to Eli. He was always really good at that.
It's actually pretty good.
Thank you. Been working on my Cajun accent. It's kind of tough to have your son on national TV like that. I think as a parent, and so you've lost control there. Like, now it's different. Now you're viewed different. Around school, you're different. And Cooper is not a coach. He's watching his son. And because it's Arch Manning, you're on national TV. And it's very rare high school football. I'm trying to think. I don't know when Matt Barkley was in high school at De La Salle. They were on national TV a few times. But I don't know. De La Salle was always really good. But I don't know if... When's the last time a football player... Julio Jones, when he was in high school, was at Hoover High in Alabama... I remember him being featured, but to do a game where it's basically, you know, like Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady this weekend, where you're saying Arch Manning, I don't remember that. I'm trying to think. Yeah, McLovin.
If his last name wasn't Manning, though, would this be happening?
No.
Yeah.
No, not for a second. No. I mean, we might have that game on, but that's just because he's, you know, a sophomore who a lot of, you know, scouts or coaches are looking at as maybe the number one high school quarterback in the country when he's a senior in high school. So just based off that, maybe. But I don't know if he's considered the number one, the you know possible number one quarterback, high school quarterback, because his last name is Manning. If his last name is Jones, we're probably not showcasing that game, I don't think. But, I'm just curious about that. Yeah, McLovin.
I just Googled most famous high school players of this century. Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields.
But we didn't showcase Trevor Lawrence games, I don't think.
Fields was a bigger star. He was national.
Yeah, I remember Justin Fields. But I don't know if they had a standalone game and it was Trevor Lawrence on display in high school.
I don't think like every high school has the capability of doing those big like Don Bosco national games. Like... Only certain high schools are on TV, right? Like, not any high school could just be on TV.
Well, they have so many of those games now on Friday night. Even at the start of the pandemic, I was watching some high school football. But there was a school out of Cincinnati, St. X, that went to Indiana to play a game. And, you know, they had some, you know, college-bound players. But you have a standalone game on a Thursday night at 9 o'clock. I mean, that's not – most of these high school games start at 7 o'clock. I don't know what kind of rating it did, but, I mean, that's pretty big stuff for a sophomore in high school. Yeah, Paulie?
This is so different. When LeBron James, his games were showed when he was a senior in high school. I remember a few of them. But he didn't have, like, an uncle who was first ballot Hall of Famer, or a couple uncles who were going to the Hall of Fame, or a grandfather who was a household name as a college and pro football player. That's the difference. I mean, this guy is easily consumable at age 15. You know his whole family history. LeBron, you knew nothing about when he's 17.
And also, you know, as a parent, you want to be able to hold on as long as you can. Because once, you know, your son or daughter becomes America's, then you don't get him back. Because then this is a big deal now. And then, you know, who he's dating, you know, how he carries himself, everything you do off the court. People are going to try to take pictures of you. Do they get you, you know, like LeBron James' son, there was a picture of him smoking pot, or at least it was reportedly looked like a joint. You know, now you're under the microscope even more, and you're not really able to handle this. You're not prepared for this. Now, it helps that your brothers, you know, or your uncles were in the spotlight, but not like this. Eli and Peyton weren't in the spot like this. A little bit in high school, but not like this. Yeah, Paul.
I heard Texas offered him a scholarship, but wants him to play free safety.
Oh,
I just
wow. That's a shot there.
No offense.
That's a shot. Yes, McLovin.
But the Mannings have never shied away from publicity or camera. I mean, going back, Peyton and, you know, Peyton and Eli were royalty when they
were. Yeah, but this is a sophomore. He's a sophomore in high school.
Don't you think Peyton and Eli were like that in New Orleans growing up? They were probably known everywhere because of their dad.
But not nationally.
Yeah. But I feel like the Mannings, don't you learn how to be in that spotlight by being in that family a little bit?
I don't know if anything prepares you for that. You know, by proxy, you're watching them, but I don't know what it's like when he goes to school. You know, are teachers asking for autographs? You know, kids are going to want pictures. They want to say they know him. I don't know. I mean, does he go on social media? That it's a lot. And you guys will, you know, get this. When your kids get a little bit older and you realize that you don't have as much control, you can't hold on to them as tightly as you want to there. And you might look at this and go, boy, I'd love for my child to be Arch Manning. I would have trepidation there because I've seen so many athletes, you think they're going to be stars and then they don't turn out to be stars. And then here's his dad, Cooper, who didn't really have a college career because of his injury. Yeah, Seton.
I'll save it.
Okay. Coming up next hour, he is the voice of Alabama football. Eli Gold will join us. He has a show each week, I think, with Coach Saban. How is Coach Saban going to petition to try to get into the stadium for this game on Saturday night? So we'll talk to Eli Gold, great voice of Alabama. And more phone calls as well, Dan Patrick Show.